This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, and for all of you people out there who have started writing your books and you want to know what in the heck is going on in this world. Anyway, it is so much fun. I started the year off with a bang with Max Allen Collins, my 11th Grandmaster to be, Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster to be on the program. And today I'm talking to a future Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster. Jason Pinter is, what can I say? He's fabulous. Hi, Jason.
Hi, how are you? That is quite an introduction.
Wow. You know, the new book is so good, and it's so funny. I don't know. I have a problem with your name. I know it's Pinter, but I see it, and I too many years in England. I always think of a pint. I need a pint.
I think we all do these days.
Yes, don't we? Well, the new book, A Stranger at the Door. It's the second in this wonderful series that you started, and I know it's going to be a nice, long-lived series because you have written a wonderful character. And the thing is, you know, there's been some... I didn't know there was some controversy, and people are like, I'm in the sort of the book world now. I should know about these things, but, you know... People are getting like so crazy politically correct. One author said, "Well, I don't know why these men are writing all these women's books." And I said, "Well, I think they've been doing that for a long time. You know, like Tolstoy. You know, a man can get a woman's voice, and so when you of course have come out with this wonderful new character, and I." You know, Rachel Maron is tough and strong and a fascinating character. And, well, you've gotten in her skin.
Thank you so much. You know, I think you can write from other perspectives, other genders, but I think the key is to try to get it right. To me, it was really important that Rachel was a woman, that she was a mother, that she was a single mother. And to get that right, I took all my own experiences as a parent, but then talked to a lot of women, a lot of mothers, and a lot of single mothers to try to understand their personalities and what went into that. Because I didn't want it to just feel like a guy writing a girl. I wanted it to feel like this was a female character. So it was important to me to get that right. And for the most part, it seems like people think I did.
I think you got it perfectly. And the... example of how you got it so perfectly is that opening. I love the opening so much. I read it once. I read it twice. I read it three times. I said, he did this. He captured this girl. Well, in some ways, it reminded me of myself because I was at, you're writing about Rachel and her daughter. And her daughter has come out with a very... my problem is I don't want to give it away. It is such a treat to read this opening. It's just a little dialogue between a mother and a daughter. And I don't care what any woman out there says. Jason Pinter is a really tough guy, but he can really get into the mind of a child and write it so beautifully.
Thank you so much. I mean, I'm very fortunate to have an incredible wife and two young daughters of my own. So, you know, I can listen to my wife talk to our two little girls and hearing just the way they talk to each other and the love, the humor. I try to capture that in the book itself because even though Rachel might be tough, she might be, you know, no nonsense. She's a mother first and foremost who'd do anything for her children. And that's the beating heart of the story, and that's why I think I love this character. It's not just the action and the suspense, but that there's a real heart to it.
Well, I agree. You get into this character so beautifully. And it reminds me of when I was talking to CJ Box once, I had scheduled an interview with him. And one of my neighbors in my condo building, she said, you know, I said, they ask me every once in a while, my neighbors will say, who's on your program today? And I said, CJ Box. And one of the women said in the laundry room said, oh, I don't read that. CJ Box, this is a girl trying to be a guy. And I said, no, CJ Box is a real guy. I said, so she thought it was, you know, some like Carol Box. And
right,
she didn't
right.
want people to know that she was a woman. So she uses an initial. I said, no, Chucky's a guy, a real guy. And he wears a cowboy hat. And I have a real penchant for men in cowboy hats. I said, believe me, he's a real tough guy. But
yep.
he has that streak too, because he has three daughters, yep. and he uses them as his sounding board, and so his women in his books are also very strong.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hey, I played college football. I have a metal plate and screws in my neck from various injuries. So, you know, I'm not a, you know, green beret, but at the same time, like my sister, who is the I love with all my heart. She loves that I'm surrounded by girls all day. I have an amazing wife, and I have two little girls, and like my girls paint my fingernails, and they put stickers everywhere, and I'm literally doing interviews from a kitchen table covered in Minnie Mouse stickers. But at the same time, I'm writing, you know, these, you know, books that can be very violent and have suspense in them. But my life is like full of stickers and Paw Patrol, so I love having that dichotomy.
Well, and it comes through in the book. The parts where you're writing about the children are so touching. And, you know, this is always, and now, of course, now that you are a publisher, you know this difficulty of how much do you give away? I don't want to tell people too much of the story. I want to become, actually, my goal in life is to become such an influencer, because I just want to be able to tell people, read the book. Don't ask me questions. Just read the book. If I say it's good, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I hugely appreciate. That's one of the tricky things when you're talking about a book and you're trying to get people to read it, is you want to give them just enough to sort of whet their appetite, but not so much that they feel like anything is spoiled. And that's always, it's very tough.
It's a delicate balance. And
yeah.
It's getting worse. I mean, now here we have a story about a woman who has a mysterious past. We don't know what it is yet. We're going to have like 40 books before we know the true story. you know, that'll get the girls through college, graduate school, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're gonna need it. So we're going to need 40
yeah,
books.
At some point, Rachel Maron's going to get tired of these kids and just be like, you know what, I'm done protecting you. Go off and do your own thing.
Yeah, because, you know, but Jason Pinter's going to have to keep paying those bills for his daughter. So he's going to
exactly.
keep writing these books. And we will be happy with them because you are, of course, such a talented author. And
Thanks.
I will tell people, if they read the opening of this book, they will not stop reading because it is that good. And just, I don't want to tell people. I don't want to tell people. People have to start listening to me and taking my advice, because I only, you know, when you get a book like this, when you get a book that's really so good and it's such, when you know that old thing, a page turner, the thing is, of course, you are a solid writer. You come to writing with a you know, a lot of things behind you, all the technical writing that you did, all the reporting that you did, all of that comes into your books, because you write so well that we don't have to worry about the quality of it. And all we have to do is worry about the story, and you can tell a story.
Thank you so much. I really, yeah, I mean, I'm a reader first and foremost, and I love to read. I love reading other people's stories. And I think, you know, there's so many amazing books out there that sometimes I read them, and I'm like, it is my goal to try to even reach that level. So if anybody thinks that I've done that to whatever extent, it means I've done my job.
Well, of course, now you started, you know, your because of this background of, you know, journalism and reporting and all of this, you weren't perhaps in the same position as most people. And many of my listeners are now writing books. They're starting, you know, they took my advice at the beginning. I say for a program for writers and those who dream of writing, many of them have taken my advice. They're writing like crazy, or they've actually, some have completed their books. And now they're to that point where they have to decide if they need an editor. Yes, you do. I'm telling all of you people, you need an editor. You really.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, it's so funny when they finish, sometimes they'll come and, you know, I'll get a thing and they'll say, I'm done. I finished it last night. I'm sending out a query. And I say, oh, please don't tell me that, you know.
But yeah, no, the first draft is the first draft. And I think, you know, that's one of the keys to writing, is knowing that the book is not done until you literally wouldn't change a word. And I think once you've finished a first draft, you need to step back, give it a little distance, be able to reread it and say, listen, I might enjoy the first draft, but there's so much I can improve here. And when you're absolutely done with all those revisions, then you think about reaching out to somebody else trying to get it published. But you really need to have that sort of like self-editing gene inside of you.
Well, your first book, The Mark, which was your debut novel, right?
Yeah.
You didn't have to do a query letter for that.
I did.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh, you had to, even though you had all the chops behind you and all the
things? I think I was 25 or 26 years old when I wrote The Mark, so I didn't really have any chops. You know, a first novel is so different from anything else you've done, and even if I had done a little bit, like, you know, doing some sports, minor sports stuff for the Associated Press or things like that, writing a novel is such a different thing that I don't think anyone will take your word for it. You need to prove that you can write a book. You need to prove you can summarize it well in a query letter and get people to want to read it. So, yeah, I absolutely wrote a query letter for my first book.
So what was it like? Are you proud of
the
it?
The query letter? Oh, God. The query letter or the book?
The query letter. Oh, the book you have to be proud of. The book is terrific.
The query letter I probably wrote over 15 years ago. I don't even remember what was in it. I obviously hope I did well enough because
somebody loved
an agent
it.
Signed me up, and an agent signed me up, and a publisher bought the book. So, I mean, maybe one of these days I'll dig through all my old files. It's probably not even on this computer. I'll dig through my old files and see if I can find it.
Well, you have to. People will want to see that. You know, did you get 18 rejections like J.K. Rowling?
Oh, I don't know. I think if I remember correctly. So this is a funny story. When I was in college, I wrote a terrible coming of age novel before The Mark. Didn't know anything about publishing or writing or that world, and I sent out a whole bunch of query letters, maybe 25 or 50, just randomly, and they were terrible query letters. I don't think a single person even wanted to read the book. So for that book, I had, you know, my wallpaper of rejections. I think for them, I got a couple quicker because I think the book was better. I think it was more commercial. So I don't think I got rejected 18 times, but before The Mark came out, I certainly had a large stack of rejection slips.
And then it happened. Somebody said,
yes.
Oh, we want it. What was that like for you?
Yeah. I remember that. It's unreal to think that not only did somebody else, because I know, having worked in publishing now, that if somebody wants to acquire a book and publish a book, it takes a lot of people to sign off on that. It's the editor who likes the book. It's sales and marketing and publishing. And
hello. Oh, no. We've dropped out. Let's try to, I don't know. He'll probably call back. This is a problem. I don't know. We have on live radio. I hope he will call right back because he's a really great guy. And we want to talk about this letter of his. But, you know, it happens. Live radio is that way. And particularly, I think there's a lot of times I always worry about people up north if they're stuck in a snowstorm, and then boom, you know, you never know. So, but I think we have him back. Big Ed in the control room is smiling. Hello, okay, we got you back. Okay,
I don't know what happened just there. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. That's live radio. So you were telling us about the thrill.
Yes, thank you so much. So I remember, like, so many people have to sign off on acquiring a book that when somebody tells you not only they want to publish it, they might pay you for it, and they're going to promote it, it's unreal. You feel like you've hit the lottery. And to have the chance to publish a debut novel and then go on to write a series and publish more books, I really feel very, very lucky.
Well, the Henry Parker series that started with The Mark was very successful, very popular. So it really sent you flying into the publishing world. And in many ways, it was one of the things that I think has interested you in the entire publishing world. And you became a publisher yourself.
Yeah, so I run an independent publishing company called Polis Books. It's separate from my own. I don't publish my own books through Polis. But yeah, I love that industry. I love finding writers. I love having the chance to bring new authors into the world. And I love working on both sides of the desk, both as a writer and a publisher. I'm very fortunate to be able to make my living in books, which is no small feat.
But it's a fascinating world. It is so much fun to be in this world and to just be involved with the people, with the writers.
Yes. I miss the writers. I can't wait until all this is over and I can see all my friends again.
Oh, I know. I had planned to be at BoucherCon and I don't know where else. You know, it's just, this has been insane. In some ways, of course, I feel so sorry for the kids that they're going through this. Of course, for you, maybe you're at home anyway a lot, perhaps, so you get to spend some time with your girls. But it's difficult on them, isn't it?
It is. You know, we have two small children, and they're, you know, they get very stir crazy. They want to be outside. They want to be running around. We actually. My family, we were living in Hoboken and actually moved away sort of in the middle of the pandemic to a house with a backyard because we knew we needed some more space for the girls. But, you know, they can't have play dates. They can't. They haven't seen their cousins in forever. It's tough. And for my wife and I, who both work full time, you know, to be both full time workers and full time caretakers, it's difficult. You know, I love my girls to death, but you know, when this is over, I think my wife and I might need a little vacation.
Well, I hate to think of what it's doing to the kids. And I just heard as I was walking in the studios, some country somewhere is now putting this next deadline into April. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is getting so terrible. I suppose, you know, a lot of writers, of course, they're home and they writing anyway, but you do get this inability to get out there and be out there and hear real conversations with real people or even, you know, sitting around in a crowded coffee shop and listening in on people's conversations.
Oh, we are terrible eavesdroppers. We like to listen to every conversation and use it in our books. So I wonder if the universal dialogue in books will go down over the next year or so because writers haven't been able to eavesdrop.
Well, I can't even imagine what's going to happen. I told people, please, no dystopian books. I really can't take any dystopian books. Somebody sent me a book. And this is true, and it's unbelievable. It's and they wrote it somewhere in March and April. things weren't quite so bad. And it's a pandemic where people have yellow leprosy, not white leprosy.
Oh my goodness!
Yellow. Everybody gets.
I didn't know there were different color leprosies.
Did I know this? I didn't know this. And everything all body parts are turning yellow. I like read two pages. I said, "You got to be joking." I'm not reading this book. I can't even have it. So what about you? Now, with your publishing house, agents, you know, come to you or can people come to you, writers?
So we do both. I would say, you know, I'd say the most of the books that we've taken on have come through agents. But at the same time, we're trying to be, you know, we're making a concerted outreach towards voices and authors that might be underrepresented or more diverse, that maybe haven't had the ability or privilege of knowing the industry and going to these conferences and pitching. So we want to be open to everybody. So we do accept unsolicited pitches. So if anyone can come to us, That said, I always try to encourage an author to get an agent because they do act as somewhat of a filter. Agents only pitch stuff that they think they can sell. But we do want to try to encourage authors to say, like, hey, if you think you have something good, send it to us, and we'll hopefully fall in love with it.
And so do you yourself actually read query letters now? Are you on that other side?
I absolutely do. Most of the queries I lead are from agents, only because there's only so much time in the day. If I read, like, we get probably 20 to 30 queries a day, and if I read all of them intimately, like, there would be no time left in the day for the business, to write my own books, and my family. So most of the query reading I do come from agents, and I'll sort of skim the stuff that comes in over the transom and hope there's a diamond in the rough.
And that's what you're always looking for. That's what I tell all of my listeners who have started writing that. That's what an agent is there for. They are looking for that diamond, and that's why a query letter, as hard as they are to write, is so important.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things I always tell writers that if you're going to write and you're going to try to make a career out of this, you need to know the industry. It's like you are essentially running your own small business, and to sort of go into it blind, not knowing the industry, not knowing who the publishers are and who the agents are and who represents the kind of books you write, you're doing yourself a disservice by just essentially tossing your book into the air and hoping someone catches it. So do your research, do your due diligence, understand the industry, because I think that's a way to a long-term career, is really knowing all the ins and outs and how you can sort of navigate the choppy waters.
And then, with a lot of hard work and practice, you might possibly write a book half as good as Jason Pinter, because
or better. I mean, listen, they're like, I don't want to toot my own horn. Like, I hope I have some talent, but I also know there are plenty of writers who are better than I do. I think that's it's an inspiration, motivation to try to keep getting better. But listen, there are plenty of books I read where I'm just like, this blows my mind. You know, this is just on another level.
Well, the new book, A Stranger at the Door, a Rachel Maron thriller, book two, and I'm going to be talking to you, book two, three, four, 24.
Your lips to reader's ears.
That's it. They will love it.
The key to these sort of long-running series is that readers have to keep coming back. So if you love Hideaway, which is the first Rachel Maron novel, and you love A Stranger at the Door, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, post about it online, because I'd love to keep writing this series as long as readers keep reading them.
And they can go to your Facebook page?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
Facebook,
what,
Twitter, Instagram, absolutely.
And your webpage is what?
www.jasonpinter.com, and you can find all the links to the books and information about me.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for being on Joy Today. On Joy on Paper, because it's been a joy today to talk to you. And I'm going to use this when I talk to writing groups. I'm going to use your opening of this book as an example to authors about how to grab a reader, because there's something about, I'm going to just tell people enough. There's something about the name of Sadie that I love. And the minute I read that, I got such a kick out of Sadie that I won't tell people why. They have to read it. But once they read that,
they have to find out who Sadie is.
Yeah, who is Sadie? This is what your goal is. Get this book, A Stranger at the Door by Jason Pinter. It's a wonderful, wonderful read. A great way to, well, if you're still, we're all in isolation still for a while. It's a great read. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you so much. That means so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Oh,
take
wow.
Care.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Okay. Bye. Wow. He's something. I love this opening. I wish I could read it on air. I would like to read it on air, but I don't want to read it on air because I want you to read the book. Because it is good. It's a good opening. A Stranger at the Door. I like it. You might never open your door again. You'll tell me, I'm not opening that door. Knock on my door. I'm not opening it. But it's a great book. We're going to go to commercial. When we come back, I have another great book today. I'm hitting off the new year with a bang. A big bang. Okay.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
And I am back, and I am just waiting for my next caller. This is going to be a great interview because his books, I really enjoy them. And he should be calling in any minute because that's what he's got to do. Anyway, I just want to tell everyone again, thank you so much for all of your wonderful emails that I've got over the holidays and into the new year, wishing me a happy new year and telling me about your progress, because I am really impressed with the number of you who have started writing. And as a few of you out there have told me that you've actually finished. Now is the big time. And as I was just talking to Jason Pinter, who has, he's a publishing company now, and he is open to submissions. But I am telling you, don't make that submission until you have the right query letter. And I've been talking to a lot of people about query letters, and they have on the internet, you do a search and you say query letter, and they come up with this thing. This is what a query letter should be, and it should be 300 words. And that's ideal. And all of you out there who are writing query letters that are 298 words, get over it. It looks silly. Okay, now this is so much fun. I get to turn to an author who I hope I pronounced his name right. I love this one. I'm not sure how to pronounce somebody's name. Huey. I hope it's Huey.
You nailed it. Well done.
Okay. M.L. Huey. Well, thank you for joining me today on Joy on Paper. What do you want me to call you? M.L.? M.L.?
Michael. You can call me Michael.
Michael. Okay, Michael. Good. My nephew went through this stage too. Michael, Mike, and my son did the same thing. Daniel, at one point he was a Danny, then he was Dan. And then now that he's going to be a PhD graduate soon, he's Daniel again. So, okay. Michael, well, where do I start with you? Whoo, Spitfire. I know the new book is not Spitfire. I know that. I know the new book is Nightshade, a Livy Nash mystery, the second in your series, but Spitfire is the one that grabbed me because my husband was a pilot, so we just, well, we were around planes all the time, and we lived in England for quite a while, and we used to fly out of a White Waltham, which was one of the grass airfields used during World War II. And we got to know many, many of the RAF pilots who flew during World War II. And we would sit around over gin and tonics, a lot of gin and tonics, and hear their stories. And so anything about anything that includes an airplane, I grab it. So Spitfire, I grab first. And then, of course, now with the new book, we're back still back there in going back just after World War II. It's a great book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, tell us how you got this idea to do Ian Fleming and make this into a major, now a major, I almost said major motion picture, because I have a feeling we're going to have a major motion picture, but yeah. a major series.
Well, you know, I have to give credit where credit is due. I read this terrific book called Codename Verity, by Elizabeth Wein, W-E-I-N. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of the SOE, the Special Operations Executive, this group during World War II that basically recruited amateurs and trained them as spies, and quite a few of them were women. And so I started, you know, researching some of the women, the actual women who did this, and reading about them, and sort of concocted my character, Libby Nash, through them. And at about the same time, I also found out that Ian Fleming, who you mentioned, of course, who went on to create James Bond, after the war, during the war, he was in naval intelligence, but after the war, he went back into journalism. And Fleming said that many of his foreign correspondents that he ran for the Sunday Times and other papers were spies. So I thought, let's put those two together and see what we come up with. And Libby, it being, you know, by no means a quote-unquote Bond girl, she's a very direct, you know, determined, independent woman, opposite, you know, someone like Fleming with his, you know, kind of reputation with women, I thought it might be an interesting dynamic.
And it is. It is. Libby is a nice, tough character, strong, the type of... well, I thought I'd like to be like Libby, although she drinks vodka and I prefer gin. you know, you can't go wrong with Libby. She is fascinating.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, and I have to say that, you know, in doing the research for the first book, Spitfire, I mean, a lot of the women, there are a couple women that she is very loosely based on. But, I mean, you know, they're extraordinary people who were just, you know, chosen because they had language skills. You know, they could pass for, you know, a Frenchman or a French woman, you know, behind enemy lines. But they weren't spies. They were given training. But they were just ordinary people. So that's kind of what made it fascinating to me.
Who risked their lives and went through really terror, what some of these agents went through. They were sent into, you know, parachuted in, and the things some of these people did are quite incredible. And you cover some of this in your books.
Yeah, absolutely. They did very, very dangerous jobs behind enemy lines. One of which is being a wireless operator. And these wireless operators, you know, would communicate back to England, and they would basically have about 15 minutes, because when they were live, when they were communicating, the Germans could pick up their signals. So it was almost like they were on a clock. You know, they could, as they were communicating, sending these important messages back, at any moment the door could, you know, burst open and the Gestapo would walk in. And that did happen. But also what was interesting to me was, you know, taking a woman who had an affinity for this kind of work, who liked it, and then, of course, after the war, you know, they were all just told, kind of go back to your normal sort of traditional women's roles in society, and that's just not working for Libby by any means at the beginning of Spitfire. So I thought, what would happen, you know, if a woman who you know, really liked this work, what happened to her after the war? So that's where Spitfire sort of launches.
Now, have you ever tried to learn how to do a wireless?
Oh God, no. No, I haven't. I've seen them. I've read all about them.
Well, you know, you should do it, because, as I said, because we flew out of White Waltham, and as a matter of fact, I one of the, I think, thrills of my life was being able to fly over the channel on the exact routes to Germany with my husband and with his friends, pilot friends. We would fly over the channel, and some of them would take the same route that they took when they were bombing Germany.
Wow.
And we would fly over, and I'm not going to say what some of these guys felt like, but it was lots of fun. And at White Waltham, we had a wireless set, and the men, of course, it was so much fun to try to learn to do that. We had nobody to communicate, but just the process of it, it is fun. And I think that it would be probably nowadays, with all the spying going on all electronically, maybe the wireless is the way that spies have to go in the future.
Well, you know there are so many series that right now said during the war, you know, resistance fighters telling their stories, especially focusing on women. And, you know, these books take place in the very, very early Cold War, which is what another thing that I was interested in, you know, like what were things on the ground like? Because obviously at the beginning of the Cold War, you know, we were still officially allies with the Soviet Union because we had been allies during the war, although obviously there was a great deal of suspicion. And my books take place when all that is breaking down.
People finally realize Winston Churchill was right. They were dangerous.
Absolutely.
You know, and absolutely. Can you believe it's 2021 and we're still at it? It's like, oh my goodness, nothing changes. But I must say, it's more fun to read your books and to go back in time. Somehow that seems more manageable.
Well, we know how that turned out.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, there is something that I think kind of is Cold War nostalgia, you know, because things just seem so much more complicated now. But I think it's because we're living through it. I'm sure, you know, I mean, I lived through, you know, parts of the Cold War myself, and, you know, there were many times that were uncomfortable as well. So I tend to think that things don't change, even though maybe hindsight makes them look a little bit better.
Oh. Now, you've done a lot of research here. Has a lot of it taken place? Have you done physical research in London? Have you gone to some of the locations that you write about?
It's some of them, yeah. A good friend of mine, a former professor who became a close friend of me and my family, is from the area of England where Olivia's from. Lancashire. So I've been there several times, and London quite a few times as well. And my family went to Paris when I was writing the first draft of Spitfire. And I remember specifically we were walking along the Seine, and now there are these little areas where you can stop and play games like tetherball and I think ping pong. And I remember my family was playing tetherball, and I was walking up a little further thinking, now, if you killed someone here, could you just toss them straight into the river?
Yeah, you look at it with different eyes when you're planning a few murders along the way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And people being captured and tortured and all that goes on in your books and that went on at that time. It's just, isn't it the research so much fun?
I say the research is like the best reason for procrastinating of doing the actual writing. you can say, oh, I got to research more. I really need to know about this. And there comes a time when you've got to put the books down and actually do the writing. But yes, research is a lot of fun.
So how did you find an agent?
By querying. You know, you write these letters, I mean, not letters now, of course, emails, to agents. But it's fairly easy now because many agents are online through this thing called manuscript wish list. They let you know what they're interested in and what they're not interested in. So you find people that sort of represent books like
you know, what I was writing, and, you know, you craft this email to them and wait.
So how was that for you? What was the process? You wrote?
Well, it was a long process for me, actually, and I think it is for most writers to get your first book published. I went through two agents. My first agent was unable to sell it after, you know, submitting it to, I think, maybe 15 editors at publishing houses. And at that point, I was really kind of despondent. I thought, okay, I'm dead now. I'm sunk. But then I started resubmitting and found another agent, a wonderful one woman who sold it within a year, sold both books within a year. But it's a long process. I started writing the first draft of the book that became Spitfire in 2013. And, you know, it published January of last year, a year ago. So it's a long process.
It is a process. And that's what I've, you know, I've been telling my listeners. I start my program with sort of a slug line, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And during these pandemic days, I've been, you know, telling my readers, start writing. And many of them did start writing back in March and April. And they thought the whole thing would be over, but it's continued. And some of them have actually finished books now. But I tell them that, you know, it is a process, and you have to have fortitude. You have to have grit, and that's part of being a writer. If you're going to give up on the first rejection, J.K. Rowling had 18 rejections. One of them was really nasty and said, "Go back, give this up, lady. Go back to teaching." So you have to be tough.
You do. You have to have thick skin. I have worked as a professional actor for quite a number of years, so I'm kind of used to rejection.
Oh, yeah, you've been rejected a lot of times.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of rejection. I think Spitfire was turned down, I don't know, 35, 40 different editors. I mean, you know, it's a lot, but you just have to persevere. And I also think it's fairly common that a lot of actors, I mean, Spitfire was not my first book. I wrote two other books that, you know, are sitting in a drawer in my desk, and my wife, Brooke, has read them, and she's been very nice about them, but she's the only person who will ever see them. So Spitfire was my third novel, and I think that's pretty common for a lot of writers. You know, it takes a while to, you know, just to know, to get a feeling of what, get your own style, get your own voice, and to really be able to put together something. But you're right, you just got to sit down and do it and keep going. But there are lots of stops and starts. I have a lot of projects that I started that I went, this does not sustain, and I stopped doing them.
Well, I think you've hit the right thing because your character's strong. That period is now, people are like going back and perhaps wanting to know, why are we in this mess now? What happened after World War II? Why? How did it all happen? Where? At what point? Nothing got resolved. The whole thing just has festered almost. And in many ways, people have to go all the way back to. Do you know Churchill wrote in when he was like 20 years old? He wrote, "I am destined." This is a true story. He wrote a story that I am destined to save England. He had no idea that there was going to be World War I, World War II. He felt it was his destiny. And one of the things that he at one point wrote is that if we don't control the Soviet Union, this is all going to fester and get worse. But he wrote that, you know, before World War I. So I think people are now going back and saying, where did we miss out? Where did we, like, not get things right? Where did we stop world peace because everybody, like, went crazy? So I think your books are a fascinating story about that period, and I think people will want to look back on it.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly hope so. You know, I'm not a historian by any means. I do enjoy the research, but my, you know, my main goal is to tell a compelling story with hopefully, you know, characters that you want to follow and are well developed.
Well, you've done a very good job here with the first two. I love Spitfire. Nightshade is great, and it's the second of the Livy Nash. And people can get it wherever books are sold. I would say they will want to read both of them. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Absolutely. You can go to mlhuie, that's H-U-I-E, .com, and you can find links to where you can buy them. And if you're an ebook reader, all this month, Spitfire and Nightshade are on sale on Amazon. Spitfire is $1.99 and Nightshade's $2.99.
Oh, wow. That's a bargain. I'm telling people, they really should get it. And it does start to put you back in that frame of mind that you start to think about history and the importance of knowing something that's going on in the world. Anyway, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. M.L. Huie, I like the name. What nationality is it, may I ask?
I beg your pardon?
What nationality is Huie?
I'm Scottish.
Scottish?
And English, yeah.
Scottish. I like it. Yeah. Huie.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great job with the new book. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. I'm sure you'll be back when you're working on book three.
Yes. I am working on book three.
I knew it. Okay. So I will have you back here soon. Okay, bye-bye now.
Much.
Happy New Year to you and your family.
Happy New Year as well.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Woo! Okay. Interesting. I'm telling all of you people, if you want to understand why we are in the mess that we are in, you've got to read Churchill. You've got to go back and read Churchill. You know, Churchill wrote his books during the middle of the war, at the beginning of the war. He wrote these fantastic books, unbelievable books, so insightful, so intelligent, so brilliant. And he could have predicted everything that's happening today because he really was. There was something magical about that man. And people really, I hope, you know, broke my heart when people were pulling down his statue in England. They are idiots because this man was beyond a genius. And his writing is incredible. If you want really great writing, you have to read Churchill. You can read all the novels that are around, but if you read Churchill first, wow, everything starts making sense. I just wish I could get more people involved in reading Churchill. This is, his books should be in every American high school. And every American kid should have one semester of reading Churchill. And if you read Churchill, not only would you learn history, you would learn poetry, you would learn science. He was way ahead, even in science. He already predicted the atomic bomb long before any scientist was talking about the atomic bomb. You can learn everything just by reading Churchill. It's absolute, it's so rich. His work is so rich. And I wish that more people would understand that when we're now in this mess, everybody is confused. Nobody knows what's going on in the world. Somebody, when you read somebody with a great deal of sense, a great deal depth of knowledge of history, he knew history going back to, you know, 1066 when England was conquered by the Normans. He knew the depth of history, and he understood he understood human nature. And because he understood human nature and he wrote about it, he could see things that perhaps other people didn't see. So if you really, really want to maybe calm yourself down, I would read Churchill. One, because it's just brilliant writing. And I don't know. I'm in a mood now where all I'm reading lately, between everything else, all the other books, is I just want to read Churchill just to feel strong again, because he makes me feel in control of at least my own knowledge. And I hope you will read that. But now I just want to repeat again that I was so thrilled to have Max Allen Collins on last week. You know, he's a mystery writer of American Grandmaster, but mostly what I just love about him is that he is a man, also a lover of history, who wrote so much about the 20th century, all sorts of major events. And he has one, you know, his Nate Heller books all reflect that history. Again, you can learn so much from authors who write well. And Max Allen Collins does it. And I want to thank him again. And now his wife is going to be on the program. I think February 4th, she will be on the program to talk about the books that they write together. Meanwhile, you can go to my webpage, radio-joy on paper, and to listen to some of the interviews. I have to put up something there about this whole thing of query letters, editors, all of you people who have written your books. You need first an editor, then you need a query letter, and you have to do a query letter will get you. You just heard what happened to Michael Huey. Whoa, look, months, years it took to get an agent, and then to get an agent who it could actually sell. So you never know. And this is one of the things. It's not easy. And please don't write a 298-word query letter. I'm like stuck in that, because people don't just listen to the internet. That's not where it comes from. A query letter has to come from your heart. It has to be right. If a query letter is 102 words and it's really good, that's enough. Don't get carried away, and don't listen to everything or follow everything you see on the internet, because they're wrong sometimes. Yes, they are, really, truly. Anyway, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. And your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You'll never know unless you start writing. It's still the beginning of 2021. If you start writing today, by the end of the year, you will have a novel of over 300 pages. Just think of it. It could happen to you, and it will if you start working. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Oh, I can't wear a general's cap in here. I need to get a general's hat. Go walking around town. People are saluting me. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now.